We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. Good morning. It's great to be back with you after the holiday weekend. And as someone posted on social media, I thought this was brilliant. When a holiday such as July 4th happens, then most people who don't take off the 5th know that Americans all deserve the right to take the 5th. And I thought that was great. So I did. We did here at AFA, and it was great. But if you tuned in on the 4th, we did a very special episode going through the Declaration of Independence and an analysis of how we can, as Christians, defend the historical fact and truth that our country and our nation was founded on the Judeo-Christian worldview, and advocate for objective morality in our government and why government matters, why this is an institution that God has ordained and has to act with legitimacy. And so if you missed that, definitely go back and listen to the podcast, and you can listen to that, especially if you are a homeschooling family with your kids. And we got a lot of really good response to that. And that is just, that's one of the things beyond the news of the day headlines. That kind of perspective and the philosophy of government and the blessings of liberty and our country are really what compelled me and drove me years ago. I mean, it's now been over a decade ago, to go into the field of the philosophy of constitutional law from an apologetics or a Christian worldview, and prompted me to write my book almost a decade ago, The Legal Basis for a Moral Constitution. And so while we talk about all of the news of the day headlines, and we're going to get to the top story in just a moment, this is what Christians really need to understand. And we talked about AFA Activate, this really great new program that teaches substantively how to live out your faith, because we need to know about theology, we need to know the knowledge of God, and then we need to apply it in our everyday lives. And that includes the civil government, which is living together in a community that the left and those who have rejected God would like to say is just this pluralistic secular society. But we all have to live together in truth and with a common understanding of the measurable difference between right and wrong, good and evil. And how do we do that? And how do we advocate not just for a majority opinion that could be based on man's whim of whatever we determine that reality might be today, and it might look different tomorrow, and it might look different yesterday. We have to be grounded in truth. And so in order to do that, we have to understand our system of government, how it works, why it functions the way that it does, and how we can together not only create a more perfect union in the words of our founders, but actually look as a society in legitimacy. And legitimacy only comes from our divine lawgiver, God himself. And so our society, any society, whether it's American or it's some other system of government, needs to reflect actual reality, which is the truth of the reality that God has presented us to. So with that, I hope that you had a wonderful Independence Day and celebrating and understanding of our heritage and here in America, what our country was founded on. So again, you can go and listen to that broadcast at afr.net. And also, we've received a lot of inquiries about my mom's theology class. We're very excited. That starts tonight. This is Monday, July 8th, so it starts tonight. It is not too late to register, so I've had a couple of inquiries even over the weekend. You can reach me, Jenna, at afr.net if you listen to that rebroadcast on Friday or the original broadcast about a month or, you know, a few weeks ago, with my mom teaching the 10 different divisions of theology. It's going to be a very substantive class, and it's free just through their church. And if you want to, tune in from a distance learning side, then we are live streaming that. And I'm going to be tuning in with a couple of friends of mine who are going to be coming over every Monday night, and we're going to have a little theology class over at my house, and tune in from the great state of Florida. So if you'd like to be a part of that, it is not too late. You can go to jenna@afr.net and let us know that you'd like to learn more about substantive theology. This was originally designed for her counseling training program through the International Association of Biblical Counselors and through my parents' home church in Colorado, but she has opened that up to all of us here at AFA, and also, you know, anyone who would like to take that class and be more grounded in theology. All right, so let's turn to the top story, of course, is about Joe Biden being just absolutely unable and incapable of being the president. And the focus has been, interestingly, more on what he's going to do in terms of the presidential race in November and whether he will stay on as the candidate for the Democrat Party ticket. But I think that the more important question is what happens in the next 7 months before whoever wins in November gets inaugurated on January 20th of next year. That's the much more important question. And we heard over the weekend as well that Joe Biden has asked his advisors to not schedule anything past 8 p.m. And I'm thinking, okay, then who exactly is running the country from 8 p.m. to 10 a.m.? And the answer to that probably is whoever has been running the country for the last almost 4 years, because the mainstream media, while the Democrats are finally acknowledging the truth about Joe Biden and his cognitive deficiencies, this isn't just some, you know, all of the sudden they are waking up to the truth of the reality of Biden's mental incapacities and suddenly saying, oh, yeah, we recognize this and we're going to be very truthful and we're going to call for this. They've seen this for the last 3.5 years. They have lied to you and the public, the White House and his advisors, and the media has been, I think, complicit in that lie by saying, you know, don't believe that. He's fine. He's fine. Oh, it was cold medicine. He was tired. It was, you know, all of these, oh, how dare you criticize an older man? He's such a great patriot and all of this other nonsense. No, this is now what I think is going on is that this is a coordinated strategy by the left to say we're really concerned about Biden and he may not actually prevail over Donald Trump. So more Democrats now are calling for Biden to drop out of the race. And so several more, and this coming from Politico, you know, again, not just the conservatives that have been calling to impeach Joe Biden or for legal reasons, but also to invoke the 25th Amendment for the last several years. Politico is now saying several more senior House Democrats are calling on President Joe Biden to abandon his reelection bid during a private call convened by Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries on Sunday afternoon. Among those forcefully calling for Biden to stand down during the nearly two-hour call were Representatives Jerry Nadler, Representative Adam Smith, Mark Tanko of California, Joe Morrell from New York. Additional calls for Biden to stand aside from senior Democrats come after the president's performance during an interview last week with ABC News. So this wasn't anything that was debate related, but it did nothing to allay concerns among rank and file lawmakers about Biden's continued viability in the race. But notice again that this is all focused just on whether they can win in November. And this is the problem when you are not principled and you are only operating to achieve the outcome that you prefer, which in politics, the goal is power. The goal is to get yourself and your party or your team in power. Then you're not ruled by any specific guiding principle that dictates your actions, but instead you are ruled by whatever will achieve your goal. That's the direction of both parties, because the Democrats would not, and the mainstream media would not be calling on Joe Biden to step aside if they sincerely believed that he could win. And that's the problem. So it's not that they're just truth tellers now and they're doing the right thing. If they were doing the right thing, they would be calling on Vice President Kamala Harris and the majority of the cabinet officials to invoke the 25th Amendment and say he is unable to discharge his duties. We've got to get him out of there for the good of the country. And they would actually be principled. And we know that Democrats, as I've often said, if they didn't have double standards, they wouldn't have any standards at all. And that's the Democrat Party. But increasingly, the right is also looking like the Democrats in that way. Now, while they may be championing more conservative policy goals than the Democrats, which is why we tend to say as Christians that the Republican Party platform more reflects our values, the party itself is also far too oriented towards simply achieving the outcome and the greed of power. And this was on full display as well just yesterday on CNN, where Marco Rubio is abandoning his pro-life messaging that he had as a candidate for president in 2016. And our good friend Steve Dace posted this on social media last night. Rubio was the most aggressive pro-life messaging candidate in 2016. He's now advocating taking life out of the party platform because he thinks he has a real shot to be Trump's running mate. And this, not having pro-life in the Republican Party platform, is what Trump wants. So Rubio, who was a very pro-life candidate, and he said in 2016 it was from a principled position, is now changing his entire messaging and his entire stance based on an outcome that he prefers, which is his own power grab, because he wants to be Trump's running mate, and so he has to satisfy Trump instead of satisfying the principles and the objective of knowing that God ultimately is our only audience. Listen to what he said to CNN's Dana Bash. This is cut one.
Now, for four decades, the Republican Party's platform endorsed a national abortion ban. Donald Trump opposes that, as you well know. He thinks it should be left to the states. There are a lot of conservative groups who are not happy about the potential to change the platform. Do you support changing the official party platform to Trump's position that it should be a state issue?
Well, I think our platform has to reflect our nominee. And our nominee's position is actually happens to be one grounded in reality. The reality of it is the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. And what that basically means is that now it's not states, it's voters at individual states who will get to decide how and to what level they want to restrict abortion, if at all. Some states will have restrictions, some states will not. And so I hope that our platform will reflect our nominee. I also think it's important to remember the Democrats, their last platform, basically endorsed abortion paid for by taxpayers at any time without any restrictions. So I think really the question here is whether they are going to have a radical, you know, plank of their platform that basically requires Americans to pay for abortions at any time for any reason up until the moment of birth. That was their platform 4 years ago. Let's see how what it looks like now when they meet again.
Okay, so he says our platform has to reflect our nominee. No, our platform, if you're a Republican, if you're a Democrat, the platform should reflect truth. It should reflect principles. It shouldn't just be this ebbing and flowing and nonsense. And as the Bible says, you know, being tossed to and fro by every wind of policy, right? If we manipulate that to the political side for a little bit, no, like we shouldn't be tossed to and fro by every wind of doctrine. No, it should reflect principles. And then he says it has to reflect reality. Well, the reality is that life begins at conception, and that every human being is made in the image of God and has inherent dignity and worth. Why can't he stand up and say on CNN, which is viewed mostly by leftists, and that's their prime audience, and Democrats, why can't he stand firm on principle and say, what, you know, with respect to our nominee, our platform should not change. In the wake of Dobbs, this is a great opportunity to say that our elected representatives, which include Congress, can legislate rightly, as the Supreme Court said, to protect life at every stage. It's that simple. So if we are, as Christians and as conservatives, focusing on the Democrats and how they are lying to us and they are not principled, well, we need to look at the Republicans as well, because so many of them are just as unprincipled, because the bottom line of Washington is that both sides just want power at all costs, and they are willing to sacrifice even the lives of unborn children. I would encourage all of you, if that makes you as upset as it made me, call Rubio's office. Tell him about it, because we need to use our collective voices as Christians and conservatives and at least demand that some people in Washington are principled. We'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. You've heard a lot about saving babies on this show, and that's because it's important to me personally. And let me just be frank with you, we need to save them. That's why we've partnered with Preborn, the nation's leader in introducing mothers with unplanned pregnancies to their babies. And once she hears that heartbeat and sees that precious life growing inside of her, she is twice as likely to choose life. Now that's a miracle. But quite honestly, if we don't save them, who will? Preborn receives no government funding, so their work is completely dependent on us. Preborn has rescued over 280,000 babies. And that's not all. They provide love, support, and counseling for up to 2 years for free, saving lives and souls. One ultrasound is just $28, or $140, helps to rescue 5 babies' lives. Abortion doesn't stop, so we can't. Together, you and I can save lives. Just dial #250 on your cell and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And speaking of the unprincipled view of just the power grab of all sides, there is a really ridiculous threat from none other than AOC, and this coming from Fox News. AOC threatens Supreme Court with articles of impeachment over the Trump immunity ruling. So if you missed that last week, the Supreme Court in their last day handed down that opinion, which talked about presidential immunity and, of course, cabined it into official acts versus unofficial acts. And both sides just took that ruling and ran with it according to whatever they thought was most beneficial to their side. And AOC is now screeching over the fact that the Supreme Court, oh, no, actually ruled in favor of the U.S. Constitution and actually took the principles of the Constitution and applied them to law, in fact, and that in her book is just absolutely wildly inappropriate. So now, as the Congress reconvenes this week, she's threatening the Supreme Court over articles of impeachment because, as the Constitution says, the justices and all federal judges, so all Article III judges, have an appointment for a lifetime on good behavior. And good behavior, of course, mirrors the impeachment in Article 1 for other officers that are subject to impeachment, including the president, that, you know, that is treason, bribery, and other high crimes and misdemeanors. This is not good behavior according to the standard and the metric of whatever AOC thinks that good behavior means. But this, of course, is how the Democrats try to power grab, because when the Supreme Court majority is for them, then they were absolutely happy to say that the Supreme Court is inviolable and every opinion is super precedent and you can't argue with the magnanimity that is the Supreme Court. And then all of a sudden, when the balance changes and it's originalist judges that are in the majority, you know, for the most part, and of course we can quibble with that, but now suddenly the Supreme Court needs to be packed, justices need to be impeached, and you know, this is a big threat to democracy and all of this other nonsense. So joining me now to discuss all this and more is our good friend Ron Coleman, who is the host of Coleman Nation. He's an attorney with the Dillon Law Group. And Ron, I just have to laugh at the leftist attempts, because, I mean, obviously this is not going to pass the House when you have even ever so slight, but it is still a Republican majority. But even just for a talking point and for a media optics push, this is utterly preposterous and ridiculous. And yet nobody on the Democrat side is calling out AOC going, yeah, you may disagree with the immunity ruling, but you can't impeach a Supreme Court justice over that.
Well, she's not a serious person. She doesn't belong in government. And she is nonetheless a highly influential political figure in the Democratic Party. So unsurprisingly, there are no enemies to the left among Democrats, and there are no excesses or limitations based on principle. So they might not vote with her. I don't even think it would be a matter of a Republican majority. I think, frankly, even if there were a Democratic majority, this would not pass. In fact, I don't think it would get out of... don't articles of impeachment have to come out of the Judiciary Committee?
Right. And, she's not going to be... Speaker Johnson isn't going to bring this to the floor for a vote or, you know, any of this. But at the same time, she is getting the fervor and, you know, of the low information voters who think, oh, yeah, this is a good idea. Because we disagree with this opinion, then it's a good idea to impeach.
That is her job. That's precisely what she was drafted to do. These are the main feature of her candidacy. And, the latter are not getting any better, so she's going to be, doing more and more of this.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. I mean, she is just a mouthpiece and a media optics driven for the worst excesses of the left, and that is her job. And we could say that there are, truthfully, that there are a few of those on the right as well. And if you look at, some of the members of Congress, right, their only job is to provoke on the right. And this is where, as you said, Ron Coleman, there are no guiding principles that limit. Principles on the left that say, you know, maybe we better rein this in a little bit. But what does this tell us about the electorate, I think, on both sides that are given to buying into this type of rhetoric when all we are as a culture are really a lot of us, and I think, unfortunately so, a lot of people are just driven by the emotion of the rhetoric of entertainment media and these entertainment men and women in office that they're not looking at principles.
Well, it says something more about democracy in general as an institution fundamentally and across all societies that have relied on democracy for all or part of their governance. It's a messed up system. It's just the only, there just doesn't happen to be a better one that we have actually been able to figure out. But this is pretty bad. You know, just look what's going on in France today. The far left is riding in the street because they won. Because they won, and they won by appealing to the worst elements of exactly the kind of thing you're describing on the part of AOC, stoking fears of the adversary as being monstrous others who are incapable of humane decision-making and really undermining the trust that this all systems of governance are based on. So that's how it's going to be.
Yeah, and this fear-mongering from the left, I mean, this is also what they're doing when they're saying, you know, we don't want to invoke the 25th Amendment against Biden. I mean, you have Joy Reid that is actually suggesting and saying that she would vote for Joe Biden in a coma over Donald Trump just because he's a convicted felon. I mean, this is how ridiculous and excessive the lamestream media is when she would rather have a comatose president who is literally physically unable to discharge the duties of his office. I mean, does she really think that the president is just a figurehead or like a potted plant and that really doesn't matter? I mean, this is beyond comprehension that the Democrats are suggesting that just because of this sham, ridiculous New York case, that Trump is now, you know, 34 felony convictions, that somehow that is a greater threat to democracy, to have someone that doesn't go with their own policies and that but is actually mentally competent. and she'd rather vote for somebody. I mean, it's mind-boggling that she can say that with a straight face and still have an audience and have a, I mean, not really top-rated because MSNBC isn't really that watched anymore, but still, I mean, she has a primetime show on national television.
But she doesn't really believe it. What she's really saying is, I don't care who's running the government now. I'm on board with everyone who knows that it is and hasn't been Joe Biden probably since go. I'm fine with that. As long as it's not Donald Trump, or frankly, as long as it's us, as long as it's our side, none of these people, the point you made at the very beginning of our conversation about AOC was she's not concerned about whether the Supreme Court is functioning properly. She's concerned about whether or not she's winning or losing. So since she's losing right now, the Supreme Court doesn't matter. And Joy Reid, I mean, look, Joy Reid is such an utterly unserious person. I mean, between her and AOC, it would be quite a race to the bottom on an episode of Jeopardy. These are legitimately intellectually challenged people who have been elevated to their positions for reasons other than merit. And that, you know, look, that's democracy. That's the circus that we're in. And as you point out, there are members of Congress in the Republican Party who do not cover themselves with glory. I would say that although there's plenty of basis to be frustrated with Republicans, there are limits that Republicans can't get away with. There are no limits with respect to Democrats.
Yeah, and I'm speaking with Ron Coleman, who is the host of the Coleman Nation podcast. Great wit on social media. You can follow him on X if you dare, and if your discretion advised on some of his snark.
It's family friendly.
It is. Yeah, fair enough. I say that tongue in cheek, just because I love following you on social media. But he's also
and Jen and I are good friends.
Yes, indeed, and share a lot of that snark. So, in part, Ron, it's that I actually admire all of your snark and wit on social media and repost you frequently. And he's also an attorney with the Dillon Law Group. Yes, and a frequent guest as well for the Legal Eagle segments on my Salem Network show, which is Jenna Ellis Tonight, that you can always tune in 9 p.m. Eastern. But Ron, you know, so let's talk also, speaking of like zero limitations on any principles for either side. In the first segment, I was talking about how the Democrats have lied to us for the last, I think, 3.5 years that Biden has been in office. And suddenly it's like the collective leftist media are awakening to this new discovery that Joe Biden is utterly incompetent. And it's ridiculous. It appears to be a coordinated strategy. But if they were winning, to Joy Reid's point, she would rather have Joe Biden, who in a coma in office, than Donald Trump. And if they really thought that they could win with Joe Biden, they would still be perpetuating that lie.
Yes. I mean, what was fascinating the night of and the day after the debate, before they started adjusting and coordinating the message, because apparently the way it went was a bit of a surprise to the Kool-Aid drinking crew, was that the overwhelming sentiment was, how do we win even though it's this bad? Not, we're going to, well, I mean, there were Democrats who said we're going to lose, and there were Democrats who said he's got to go. But a solid third or more were saying, how do we win? Joe looked terrible. That's really going to make it hard for us to win with him. That's fine. They don't care about whether or not he's cognizant. Donald Trump is the epitome. And Jenna, it's super important to remember, as unusual and unique a figure Donald Trump is, and you know better than I, the same level of intensity was expressed about George W. Bush. And the same level of intensity, yes, the same, was expressed about Ronald Reagan. And before that, Richard Nixon. Republicans are always the end of the world. If they have any kind of conservative policies, they're just the absolute worst. They're stupid. They're venal. They're corrupt. They're every possible thing you can accuse a president of being if he's a Republican, they will routinely be accused of. And we never, ever remember. And we get all of a sudden strange new respect for George W. Bush. At least he was a you called him Bush Hitler. That was the that was the dominant approach to describing Bush. This is just how they roll.
See, and Ron, I so appreciate you bringing up our recent history that, you know, somehow our collective judgment doesn't remember anything past, you know, barely a 24-hour news cycle or maybe even 25 minutes. But history is important because if people really think that Trump is the end of democracy, and I've even heard people say, you know, this is the last Independence Day that we'll ever celebrate as a nation. Oh, no. You know, if Trump possibly gets elected in November, it's like, okay, you know, no. But we have heard all of this rhetoric before, and it has been every Republican. And the Democrats have always said that. And why? Because they are so interested in just winning and achieving power at all costs. And yet the Republicans need to take a lesson from that. And instead of accelerating their hyperbole to match the leftists' inane rhetoric, we need to pull back and be a little bit principled. And this is why I'm very grateful that people like Representative Chip Roy, Senator Mike Lee, and others are actually standing up and calling for the 25th Amendment to be invoked, even if that has an impact on November. I mean, they're not looking at just November and winning. They're saying, what good should we do for the country now? And in just about the last minute I have with you, I think that the 25th Amendment, there's no question that it needs to be invoked. What say you?
There's no question that it ought to be evoked. Of course, it should have been evoked years ago. It's just, you know, it was a good idea. It was passed, as you know, after the Kennedy assassination, when people asked, what if he had not died but had been rendered incapacitated? No one really anticipated a dementia kind of situation where you and you know, it not only does it need to be invoked, it probably needs to be perhaps amended.
Yeah, well said. And I would support that certainly. But Ron Coleman, always appreciate your time and your analysis. We will be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Every day, AFA offers biblical insight on issues that others aren't willing to touch in the hopes that you'll become a world changer. That's why we're offering an in-depth worldview training course called Activate. 13 different professors teaching 18 sessions, all available online, including a printed workbook to help you apply what you've learned and one-year access to AFA streaming content to give you even more resources. Find out more about Activate and sign up today at activate.afa.net. Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And speaking of being very unprincipled and choosing just winning and revenge over principles and a great voting record, the current contest going on in the state of Virginia with Representative Bob Good's race is just a fascinating insight into how the corrupt system in Washington really works. But Representative Bob Good joins us now, and he's the chair of the Freedom Caucus. And first, before we get into the important news of the day topic, sir, that I would like to ask you about, how is the recount and your race going?
Well, the formal recount will be, morning, Jenna, great to be with you, but the formal recount will be filed this week. The deadline is Friday. We're still in the information gathering, investigative phase of, you know, preparing our case, if you will, to challenge the results of the election and what everyone should want, and hopefully everyone in Virginia's 5th District and affiliated with it does want, is an accurate and fair reflection of the true intent of the legitimate legal voters who participated, and you want to make sure every legal and legitimate ballot is counted accurately, and that nothing, you know, there were no mistakes or no improper activities that might have impacted it. And so we are working through that, and we will have the recount filed this week. We're in sort of the boring phase right now where patience is unfortunately necessitated as you work through the behind-the-scenes process, but we'll file it this week.
Okay, and we will be praying for the correct and true outcome to be clear in that case. And I think that's very well articulated, that it should be a reflection of the true intent of the legitimate able voters. And so, of course, praying for you on that. And so Congress is back in session this week, Congressman, and in the last segment we were talking about, you know, AOC now in light of this presidential immunity decision for the Supreme Court suggesting that she wants to file impeachment articles against some of the justices of the Supreme Court. I mean, this is just utter nonsense, but this is what the left does, and when something doesn't go their way, they challenge it. So what are the actual priorities of Congress heading back into session this week?
Well, our primary responsibility this week and in the weeks ahead will be the appropriate funding of this government. And I do want to acknowledge that we have passed, three or four of our spending bills out of the House so far that reflect conservative priorities that are undoing, at least in the form they've come out of the House, the woke, harmful, destructive policies of the Biden Pelosi-Schumer regime that's still in place, unfortunately, because of us doing all these continuing resolutions over the past year and a half. But these would reverse the diversity, equity, inclusion, critical race theory, the climate extremism, the LGBTQ policies, the abortion funding, and those sorts of things that have permeated every agency, every department, every part of the federal government under the Democrat control, that Republicans have the opportunity to fight to change with us controlling the House. So we've passed good spending bills so far. We need to continue to do that for all 12, hopefully before we go into the district work period in August, hopefully complete that in the month of July. But, Jenna, the all-important thing is when we get into a fight with the Senate, who will not agree to any of these policy changes, are we going to roll over and surrender as we have for the past year and a half and yield to what the Democrats want so there's no disruptions to the government that's perpetrating all the harm on the country and executing the policies that we campaign against and stand against? Are we going to just surrender, or are we going to have a fight and, you know, achieve at least a middle ground where we get half of what we want along with half of what they want, which has not been achieved so far? So that's the real fight. There's some other things. We're going to try to pass Chip Roy's SAFE Act out of the House this week, which would require voter ID in every state. Everyone should want that, proof of citizenship and voter ID. Of course, Democrats don't want that, so that'll be a battle as well.
And what can people listening around the country do in terms of participation in contacting their representatives to champion the good spending bills and the good budget and just encouraging their members of Congress to do the right thing? And of course, if they are, you know, Republicans and conservatives, not yielding to some of these compromises that we have seen in the past, but actually standing firm to legislate responsibly.
Well, if you have primaries, and what you want to do, of course, is battle for the best and fight for the best, most strongest principled conservative in your respective primary, so that your nominee is someone who's going to fight for you in Washington and not surrender to the Democrats or cooperate with Democrats. But then this summer, as we head towards the September 30 funding deadline, everyone needs to hear from their constituents that, hey, don't join with the Democrats. Don't join hands with Democrats to increase spending and to keep the policies in place that are destroying the country that you campaigned against, Mr. Republican. So if you have a Republican representative, you need to tell them you expect them to fight and, if necessary, be willing to stop funding the government that's destroying the country, stop funding the border invasion, stop funding the abuse of power by the Department of Justice, stop funding this climate extremism and those sorts of things that are trampling on our constitutional liberties that are part of this government. Stop funding it, and unless the Democrats meet us halfway, at least when we have a House, they have a Senate, then let's not go along to get along and just continue it into next year. In addition, we need to not allow the Republicans to join hands with Democrats and fund the government past, say, the first quarter of the Trump presidency, Lord willing, so that if we have a Republican House, Republican Senate, in a Republican White House, we have the ability to shape how the government is funded and the policies that are in place next year that reflect the will of the voters on November 5. You're going to have a movement, Jenna, from Mitch McConnell and Hakeem Jeffries and Chuck Schumer and, I fear, even Speaker Johnson, to let's clear the decks, let's take everything off the table, let's relieve the pressure of the new White House, the new administration, and fund the government through September 30 of next year, which would mean you'd have no impact from the election on how the policies and the spending levels are next year until October 1. So we need to do it. If we can't get our spending bills passed that reflect our priorities, or at least half of those priorities, then don't do a continuing resolution beyond the first quarter, so that therefore we can have the early part of the new administration and new House and Senate majorities, hopefully, to impact how the government is funded.
And that's a great point. I mean, do you think that some of the Republicans, say Speaker Johnson or even a Mitch McConnell, are concerned that if there is a Biden or perhaps his replacement presidency that ends up winning in November, that then it would be a good thing to bind the government at least until November 30th? Is that potentially part of their calculation?
It could be, but that only makes sense if you fight for Republican priorities. If you're gonna, again, it all comes down, just like it did a year ago, September 30, when the government funding ends, if Republicans are willing to fight and risk a temporary disruption to the non-essential part of the government operation, when the Senate tells us no, and the Senate says take it or leave it, and the Senate says we're keeping all the extreme policies that Democrats want in place, and we're going to increase spending, take it or leave it, Republicans, because otherwise you'll be shutting down the government. Not us in the Senate, but you in the House. Then if Republicans are going to surrender that and do what Democrats want, then it really doesn't matter. So it's only if you're willing to fight for Republican priorities. And if we do stay the course of the last month and we pass Republican spending bills through September 30, by the deadline, I should say, and we fund the government reflecting Republican priorities and, you know, spending, modest spending cuts at least, and changes in the policies as I referenced a few moments ago, and then we say we funded the government, then you, Senate, take it or leave it, then why do we accept responsibility for shutting down the government if the Senate doesn't take what we pass? Why do we surrender to the media narrative and the Democrats' narrative that, oh, if we don't agree with what Democrats want, then we have shut down the government? And I would submit shutting down the government is better than perpetrating the harm to the American people by doing what the Democrats want. But we all take the stance. We're going to pass our bills reflecting our priorities and then stand strong and say, Senate, you're either going to have to agree to these policies or we'll have a shutdown that you've caused because you don't want to agree to the funding the government, the House has done.
I'm speaking with Congressman Bob Good from the great state of Virginia, the chairman of the House Freedom Caucus. And that makes a lot of sense. And I think it's the Democrats that have come out in the last week since the debate that are very concerned about their top of the ticket primarily, but also how a Joe Biden candidacy would impact all of their down ticket races, which, of course, would affect the majorities in the House and the Senate. And Representative Chip Roy and Senator Mike Lee have been in favor openly of encouraging the vice president and the majority of the cabinet to invoke the 25th Amendment, because not even focused on what happens in November, but the next 7 months that we still have Joe Biden as an occupant of the White House, but clearly unable. What is your position, Congressman, on that measure and that resolution to urge the vice president to invoke the 25th Amendment?
Well, it is clear to every honest, objective person that Joe Biden is incapable of effectively executing the duties of his office now. It's clear that he's, you know, they've even admitted now he works from 10 to 4. And you can watch him on display. It's now been admitted that one of his staffers, hey, we have to draw maps and pictures of him on where to go when he approaches a podium and how to get off the podium and that sort of thing. You've got the media person just acknowledging, the radio person who interviewed him after the debate, that they had to give him the questions in advance. That was required of the White House. It's on full display for everyone. And he could never get elected today, or you would never choose him today and say, this is the person who should be president based on his abilities or lack thereof, clearly. And so that puts the country at risk today, let alone November 5, let alone next year, if he were to be reelected, which I don't think he would be. But he clearly is incapable today. And so I think that Chip Roy and Mike Lee are right to call for that. Now, there's no congressional mechanism to remove the president for that. Of course, it has to initiate with the cabinet. and the vice president primarily, of course, to call for that and to show principle and to do that. And so I think public pressure and saying what we all know to be true is appropriate. And I appreciate Mike Lee and Chip Roy leading the way on that. I doubt that Democrats will respond principally to that. I think what they're trying to do is kind of hold on and ride this horse out for the remaining 6 months of his presidency and try to figure out what can they do to try to win. I think Kamala Harris is their only option just for the complexities of trying to, you know, to move the money from their campaign to another campaign with the political challenge of them, you know, ditching her as the nominee. I think, and plus all the delegates are pledged to Biden-Harris. So I think their options are Biden or Harris, neither which are good on November 5. But I think Chip Roy and Mike Lee are right to call for action to this president should be removed by his cabinet, by the Congress, if the cabinet would act.
And has there been any discussion about Section 4 of the 25th Amendment that allows for any other such body as Congress may by law provide if there was legislation around saying, okay, we know that the vice president and the cabinet aren't going to do their job and invoke the 25th Amendment, and so Congress together is going to actually by law provide for another body, say, of nonpartisan doctors that will give their analysis, or, you know, some other type of body that the 25th Amendment does provide for to remove him?
Well, I think that's highly unlikely. I don't think Democrats are going to take I don't think Democrats are going to be willing to remove the president. I don't think the cabinet is, or the vice president. I don't think congressional members would support that. And so I think that that's highly unlikely that something like that would happen. I think that we are left with either the vice president and the cabinet taking action, which is unlikely, or this president staying in office unless he physically becomes unable between now and the end of January 20.
Wow. And what a debacle that we are left with as a country and as Americans that are left facing 7 more months of a president that clearly is unable to discharge his duties. But in the last couple of minutes that I have with you, Congressman Bob Good, and I always so appreciate your time. And again, we are praying for you. We are praying for the country, for all of our elected officials in Washington, as the Bible commands us to pray for those who have authority over us. We are praying for you. There has been a lot of discussion around the Republican Party platform changing its official position on abortion. We've seen Senator Marco Rubio, even Senator J.D. Vance, going out and suggesting that the party platform needs to reflect the nominee. That certainly would be, in my opinion, a cave on the pro-life stance that the Republican Party has maintained. What is your position on that?
Yeah, I'm very concerned about that. If we're going to start to jettison or discard, you know, critical foundational issues, fundamental moral issues, principled issues, in the name of pursuing power or winning elections, what else are we willing to discard and cast to the side and turn our back on? And what is the point of winning elections if not to do the right thing? And I think life is a foundational issue, a fundamental issue that we need to stand principally upon. The Supreme Court had the courage to overturn Roe and to turn it back to the people's representatives, which includes Congress. I think Congress ought to act on the federal level to protect all life, as state legislators ought to act in their respective states to protect life. And so I'm very concerned about that. And I'm just, you know, there's a reason why you're a Republican, and there's a reason why we give and we work and we serve and we contribute and knock the doors and make the calls and recruit the candidates and all the things that put up the signs and all the things we do. Is because our party stands for something. It can't be just about winning elections for the sake of winning elections and not being as bad as the Democrats. So very concerned about that. And life has been a fundamental foundational issue for the Republican Party for going on at least since the 1970s, so 50 years anyway, since the Roe decision. And so my hope would be that more Republicans would meet the moment. And unfortunately, that doesn't seem to be the case at this point.
Well, thank you, Congressman Bob Good, for standing up firmly for life. You and I had a conversation very early on after the Dobbs decision about Congress and the elected representatives having the ability to legislate on a federal level to protect life in accordance with the Constitution. And you're continuing to stand firm for the right position, the morally right position of life. And we really appreciate that about you and your firm stance for conservative and Judeo-Christian principles. So thank you so much. And that's all the time we have for today. You can always reach me and my team, Jenna@AFR.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.